ramble about the film that came out a few months ago. I'm always late to the party, of course, when these things is 28 years later. I have to be careful not to get that mixed up with the days later. I'm not really very familiar with this franchise. I remember when the first one came out, and I didn't like it. I don't like zombie movies. I think zombies are boring. I think they make for poor antagonists. And I also think that the zombie movie, the actual thing of zombies in current culture is way overdone. I don't understand why everything has to descend into some sort of zombies. I mean, sometimes they'll have like a get out where like this, like in the days later, it's they're technically they're not zombies. They've got some kind of virus or sickness or whatever. I see all of these sort of people arguing endlessly about these video games and series like The Last of Us or something, which everybody complained about, but I don't know anything about that because I never played the game. There's all of these different sort of franchises and whatnot, all about zombies, and I just find it boring. And there's a kind of cultural commentary around the zombie movie, where you can see it reveals a sort of contempt for the mass. It's a commentary on the mindlessness of the mass, and this goes all the way back, I think, to like to the early 70s, and you had like Night of the Living Dead, or is it, and it was this kind of commentary on consumerism, where it took place in a shopping mall in America, and the idea was that it just looks like a normal it looks like a normal sort of busy shopping day. And you get all these different kind of slants on it, and I find that you don't even, well, you don't even seem to get that very much anymore. It's just a sort of zombies, and this kind of mindless mass of an antagonist. It's just become a lazy way to make movies. But to get back to 28 years later, which is the third movie in this series or whatever. When you actually watch the film, it's as if the zombies don't even matter. And what I find interesting, and a lot of people asked me to give my thoughts on this, and I genuinely was interested in it, even though I don't like zombie stuff, I get bored with it, because it was set in the Northeast. I think the first I looked at it was by an article on Substack by Johan Kurtz, Becoming Noble. And I read his take on it, and that was the first time that I learned that it was like sort of completely diversity free, which is remarkable in our current UK. You never see that at all. And I thought, well, okay, this is interesting, but I'm still not desperate to see it. But then, of course, I've waited, and now I have seen it. And it was strange because I'm just not used to seeing. I mean, one of the reasons why people wanted me to comment on it was because it's rooted in Northumberland, in the Northeast, which looks lovely. It looks beautiful. And it was, for me, on a personal level, it was very strange to watch people with like actual Geordie accents make up the bulk of a cast on like a kind of high-end production like this, which I never see. It's a funny thing, because these days it's always like about representation in media, and I realized, I thought to myself, yeah, it's strange because I never see myself represented in media by in the old-fashioned regional way. I mean, I used to get more representation in the 80s and 90s with stuff like Biker Grove or our Wiedersehen and Pet than now, weirdly enough. But what I really liked about it, before we kind of dig into it, it was lovely to see. Northumberland looked absolutely stunning throughout. And it isn't just that it was sort of my region, my people, if you like, in the immediate sort of vicinity of the Northeast England. It was absolutely coded in a way which was traditional England. And this is another reason why I think so many people are kind of left scratching their heads with this. And when I remember reading Johan Kurtz's article on this a few months back when it first came out, there was something stuck in my mind that he'd said where Danny Boyle and Alex Garland have created this lovely picture of bucolic England, only to snatch it all away again. And I thought that was interesting, and I thought, well, okay, I wonder what's going on with this. And a number of people on Twitter and whatnot have said, like, have you, what do you think of this? What are they trying to do? And so obviously it's 28 years after the virus, the plague, what they call the rage virus, which is kind of the zombie outbreak. Everybody catches and spreads this thing, and it makes everybody into basically the zombies. But they can run fast, which was one of the things with this franchise broke, where all of a sudden they don't just shuffle along with their arms out, but zombies can run, they can sprint. And in this one, they've even cranked that up a little bit further, which I'll come to later. And it is what it is. It's run away, shoot them. But there's elements in this of like father-son relationships, the rites of passage, and this kind of ritualism, and all of that is rooted in sort of belonging and community and a traditional sort of view on England, which I thought was all very interesting. I mean, I don't like Danny Boyle, and I don't like Alex Garland either. I think they're tedious shit libs. And a lot of people will say, if you look at the Olympic ceremony in 2012, I've heard people say, like, this is the kind of wholesome celebration. This was the last time we could have a wholesome celebration of British identity. And I didn't view it that way whatsoever as I watched it. I remember viewing the 2012 Olympics, because this was by Danny Boyle. I think he was the director of it. So this put instead of a movie, it would be this giant stage play. And I remember at the time thinking, this was the first time that I noticed they'd made this sort of the NHS had become like a religious symbol. This was the time when they had an enactment of the Windrush arriving, and you began to see they placed like sort of black people and Jamaicans and Indians in industrial England. They were there throughout. And, because they were trying to do the story of Britain, but it was very much a regime-approved narrative on Britain. It was very much like a sort of Blairite, what people would say now, managerial or globalist or however you want to. That was the view of Britain put forward in the 2012 Olympic ceremony. And the other movies that I've seen by Danny Boyle, I didn't really like very much either, except for Trainspotting going back in the day, but even that was left a bit of a sour taste in the mouth. And so the reason why I bring all of that up is because when you then come to a situation where you've got this zombie movie and there's a total lack of diversity. And I've got personal reasons why I feel affinity for that part of the world and the people in it and these traditional family structures and everything. That's one thing. But if we park that to one side for a second, you've also got the issue of why is this allowed? Why are there no diversity whatsoever on Holy Island within the community? Even none of the zombies are black either. And in order to understand that, we have to dig into the timeline of the movie itself. And I especially want to focus on the world building rather than the kind of the character arcs, which are kind of generic as well. Although, again, you do have father-son relationships, you've got rites of passage and that kind of thing. But in the timeline of the movie, if we think remember it's 28 years and the first film came out in 2002. So 28 years ago is 1997, which is kind of funny because that's the year that Tony Blair came to power. And so what you're really dealing with in 28 years later is not so much a zombie movie, but an alternative timeline movie. Because in this world, despite from what I gather, in the previous film, they had it where the zombie virus actually escaped and got into continental Europe, and that's how it cut off. That's when the end of the film happened. But in this one, it's we've changed the timeline, and it's that the United Kingdom and Ireland have been quarantined for 28 years at this point. The best is, again, like weirdly enough, since 1997, the year when Tony Blair came in, the year when New Labour came in. And so Britain has been quarantined since that year. And so history, in a, if you imagine back in our world, that somebody like me would say that 1997 was a crucial pivotal year of where things began to go wrong. And this is what I think is interesting about this, because they could have called, well, they had to keep it with the 28 years, 20. So I get that. I get the it was 28 days, 28 months, and now they've done 28 years later. So okay, whatever, just by coincidence when the year when Tony Blair came to power. But nevertheless, we are still in this alternative timeline. And in this alternative timeline, because the United Kingdom and Ireland, but here we're in Northumberland, we're in England, and it is specific to England, because England then has been locked in this different timeline where globalism never happened, mass immigration never happened, political correctness never happened. And we'll come on to that later, but in this timeline, Jimmy Savile is still a national hero. So what are they trying to do here? This is very strange. It's a very strange direction for them to go down, because what we find is that 28 years after the original outbreak of the virus, the world that we inhabit, the timeline that we're on in the fiction, in the narrative, is that they're traditional. They're sitting around. They're still more or less religious. It's very conservative. The women are being separate from the men in their tasks. The family structures is intact, but they do sort of undermine that a little bit with the father. But the father has a good relationship with his son. The son has a good relationship with the mother. And there's a whole arcs about that, that she's not very well. She's sick. And so it actually looks more sort of traditional than what it actually did in 1997. We at the beginning of the 28 years later, they signpost this as well by having the Teletubbies on television. So the world that we see in they've got like banners of the Queen up, and throughout, Danny Boyle is saying he's deliberately pushing the nostalgia buttons to the point where they've even got clips of Henry V, the 1944 Laurence Olivier movie. So again and again, they're hammering the point home that this is traditional England, this is patriotic England, this is England coded with a deep reverence for the past and for rituals and for iconography of the Queen and all of that kind of thing. And to go back to when Johan Kurtz said to pull it all away, well, they didn't quite do that, but I know what he means. And a lot of people are reading into this and thinking, is this kind of a nod and a wink to us? Because I felt called out by this. I felt as if like is, what are they there's a, this is why I enjoyed Kurtz's article, because it's as if they're doing this thing where we're so used to having subversive media. We're so used to sort of taking a beating from mainstream Hollywood fare that you think, where's the catch here? Is this bait on a trap? Or can you just switch your mind off and kind of enjoy the vibe? And what I think they're doing here, and why it's important to remember the original timeline, is that they're essentially saying this is the world where the reactionary right, the nationalists, the conservatives, the Little Englanders, this is the timeline where you were victorious, where you won absolutely everything. You got all of the political gains, you got all of the cultural gains, and here you are in a world which looks like 1970, which is what you really want. But of course, to get back to the main gist of it, it is a horror movie, but it is a death cult. You are in this sort of nostalgic death cult, and death is a major theme in the movie, not just from the zombies, but in a kind of cultural death. Now, one of the prime examples of this is that the little boy's mother is got a sickness that we don't know what's exactly going on, but then later we find out that she's got cancer and she doesn't have long. And here I'll introduce another character which I think is interesting, and it's that in the narrative of the movie, there's at the beginning when the boy and the father go off, they see this bonfire, this huge fire way down south towards, well, they're up in Northumberland. Just the logistics and the geography, I don't think they'd actually be able to see it. Let's just say he's down round about where the Tyne would be, which is about 30 to 40 miles from Holy Island. And what they're told that there's this crazy man, and he's presented as that there's this doctor. He was once a doctor, and he's all alone, and he's mad, and he's crazy. And they've quoted him as if he's a kind of shaman or witch doctor or some kind of lunatic out on the fringe who's away from the tribe and an outcast, an exile from everybody else on Holy Island. Somehow he survives on the mainland and all of that. And eventually the little boy will go with his mother and they'll meet, and it's Ralph Fiennes. And what we discover is that actually, by this time, they've got a baby. I'm going to come back to this. They've got one of the sort of rage virus has given birth. And one of the what they get from Ralph Fiennes is that he actually isn't crazy and he isn't a witch doctor, but it is that he's an outcast. And what we find about him is that he is a man of, and was an actual doctor and a surgeon, so we can assume he worked for the NHS. But you see, in this timeline, he's not crazy. He's a purely rational man, but the world that he inhabits is one of these sort of reactionary types. They've reverted. England is regressing and going back and back further and further. And here with Ralph Fiennes, what I found interesting was that this is the only person within the movie who we can imagine listening to BBC Radio 4 or reading The Times or The Guardian or paying attention to Newsnight. In other words, he's the last liberal. He's the last of the educated, rational metropolitan types. And he is, it's his class and it's his sort of worldview which are have been the biggest losers in the world of 28 years later. Because what you see is that the old-fashioned tribalism is back. Tradition. And this kind of thing has made a comeback in this world, and he is out on the periphery. He is the kind of like the last rational liberal, as they would think of themselves. Let's not forget. So Ralph Fiennes is the man who would have voted Remain in Brexit, because Brexit is also coded within this. Alex Garland has said that it's not so much about Brexit because we've been quarantined by the rest of Europe. And he said it's not so much about Brexit, but the fact that the world went on anyway, regardless. And I thought that, well, that's just saying the same thing in a different way, so you don't offend people who voted for Brexit. He's, oh, well, it's just a world where, England stayed still and the rest of the world, the rest of Europe carried on. So we get this Swedish fella and he's got an iPhone, and of course our characters don't know what that is. They don't really know what the internet is and this kind of thing. But what we find is that Ralph Fiennes is this hangover from the liberal world. He is the man who would have voted for Tony Blair, but he finds himself in this death cult world, this world which is obsessed with going back in the past. This is why we get these signals of Henry V, of people firing arrows, of England's glory, of these old pictures of Queen Elizabeth II, the banners on the wall. All of it is to say the kind of, this is the world where the reactionary little Englanders were completely victorious and they created a death cult. This is the rug pull. This is the kind of the switcheroo they're cleverly trying to play on you. And it's just that Ralph Fiennes is the last liberal, the last Guardian reading liberal. And another thing which leans into this is that you have at the start of the movie a young boy escapes, again because the priest welcomes the zombies in, welcomes the apocalypse, which I wouldn't look too deeply into the religious themes of this with Ralph Fiennes has constructed this bone temple, or like a kind of paganistic temple full of bones and ancestor worship, which is like, that's logically, he's kind of embracing where they are and saying, memento mori, you have to look death in the face. And it's because now that we've kind of obliterated civilization, this is my reading of it. It's that now, like, civilization has been obliterated. You're going to have to stare these hard sort of truths about life and death in the face and leave aside your kind of cope of Christianity, which is also embedded in right from the start of the movie. And the young boy who runs away comes back at the end with a gang, and they're all dressed up like Jimmy Savile. And you can see that. I think that there's part of an in-joke here, of course. It's part kind of repulsive. And it's also part of connecting to the occult and to the death. If you want to go there, like I did that, I've done stuff before, and other people have, on Jimmy Savile as this kind of occult figure of the occult. There's something weird and dark about him. And they're touching on that as well in this. But it's also another way to say, like, in 1997, I think people were, there was a few alarm bells going off about Jimmy Savile, but he wasn't outed the way he was in the late sort of 2010s, just before he died. And so in this world, a world where Jimmy Savile is still respected because the timeline was altered and the truth never got out before the world ended, kind of, or before Britain was destroyed in the zombie apocalypse. In this world, you see that actually he's still revered. And so what they're, again, it's another way of them saying, this is what you celebrated. This is the past. Because Jimmy Savile is coded as being, wrongly in my opinion, but being coded as belonging to a conservative establishment in Britain. He was at his peak during the Thatcher years and this kind of thing. And so they're saying all of your icons are false gods. They are corrupt. This is the, when the lefty liberals say you're nostalgic for a world that never existed. They're deploying all of these tropes. And yet the weird thing is many people on the right will look at this film and a lot of the and feel, yeah, they're so bereft of like me. Where, yeah, I never get to see just a homogenous sort of white English, and then on top of that, northeastern Geordie cast and all of that. This brings me to the, now on the Jimmy Savile point, just before I sort of move on to my final point, I do think It gets kind of weird and stupid the way they jump around like Power Rangers, and I'm not too sure like of that particular take. But they're gonna make another one which is already wrapped, so maybe I'll have to revise all of my thoughts on this in whatever 6 months when it comes out. But one thing that I will say is that just how white and wholesome this looked speaks for itself, because in our timeline, I mentioned Ralph Fiennes was like the last Guardian reading liberal, living as not as a core part of the establishment or a core part of the group, but as the last sane man in a way, out on the periphery. You know, if you remember, Ralph Fiennes does not view the infected as these kind of supernatural entities. He just says that they are sick. In other words, he's got a rational explanation for it all. When they bring the baby home, he's like totally fine with that. He because according to him, the placenta will mean the baby's a healthy baby child. And you can see there's a kind of little bit in there where the future. It's almost as if the people who the community on Holy Island, who've kind of regressed and gone back in time, there's not quite, but they are edging there to say you have to be tolerant of the zombies, you have to be tolerant of this baby because you don't you what you're doing is being prejudiced against things that you don't understand, and this is why Fiennes doesn't view them as demonic entities but people who are sick. So you get that rationalizing of the barbarian, if you like. You get this rationalizing of the alien dangerous other who like genuinely are out to kill them all. And in this way you can think, yeah, I'm actually pleased that your group left this. But also I would say, you know, the UK that we've got, it isn't that great. In fact, it looks more like the sort of the horror show on display here than what traditional sort of England would if it was sort of in aspect just prevented, just stagnated. There's worse things than that. There's worse things than being kind of stuck culturally, which is what the commentary is here. But on the idea that it's so white and lacking in diversity, there was a bit of pushback in the Independent and elsewhere, and a bit of confusion as to what they're doing here. But you see, the whole point of the subversion was that it was 100% homogenous and white. That was the point. It wouldn't have worked if you could have had, if there was like, black people and Asian people and all of that, because they're in that world as depicted by the narrative, as a film, that's the world that we actually got. That's the world where the diversity happened, where multiculturalism happened, where globalism happened. And so you get into this weird kind of paradox, because liberals in the real world will not like and don't like how white 28 years later is. But even though the message of 28 years later is that if sort of little Englander reactionaries got their way, it would become a death cult stuck in nostalgia and regressing or ever backwards. But they can't accept that because they're too myopic that they have to insist that the diversity is placed in there, even though the message would be lost. And it's a little bit like the Man in the High Castle came out a few years ago, the series where it was a kind of hypothetical scenario where the Nazis won World War II. And when it came out, and people looked at the world that was depicted, too many people thought, actually, this looks better than what we've got now. And it caused a huge sort of a lot of problems at the time, and people got uncomfortable with that. And so even when depicting the as a kind of right-wing dystopia, they can't actually allow it to be seen that way. But though, to be fair, in 28 years later, they did do that. They did do that, but because they knew that, well, if we make it diverse, we can't actually get the message across. And so what you end up with is this kind of where I felt that I was being called out more than I would have done if it had been peppered with diversity. But the problem is, you then get the other problem, which is that when people see it, regardless of the fact, you know, that it's that whole media literacy thing. When people actually see it, they think this looks so much better than what we've got now, which is exactly how so many people did see it, especially the lovely scenes around Northumberland, and there's the scenes of the Angel of the North, where for some reason South Tyneside housing estates have disappeared within just 28 years. And in a way, it works. It's a very interesting thing because on the one hand, they're saying, "Well, look at this. This is the sort of the future if the Brexit voting little Ingela Gammons had won everything, it would look like this." Now, if you take the zombies out of that equation, it actually doesn't look too bad at all. But it does, you know, and the world of the liberal man of Ralph Fiennes in this brought about what's increasingly looking like an apocalypse. But we can't help but pick up on the fact that, yeah, it does in this kind of also clever thing that they're trying to do, you still just identify with what's wholesome, and so they've tried to kind of poison that. But it hasn't really worked, I don't think. But interesting nevertheless, and some lovely scenes in it as well. Well, interestingly, in this timeline, their timeline, the Sycamore Gap tree at Hadrian's Wall is still there, and they signpost that. They showed about three or four times in the movie, and I thought that was an interesting touch, which touches on what I've been saying, because in the dystopia as presented here, the Sycamore Gap tree still exists, but in the kind of broken down nihilistic world which we actually inhabit, that got chopped down by thugs for no reason. And there's a lot in that, you know, there's a lot in that. So, yeah, thanks for listening, folks.